Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXOradio.com.
Good morning, Imperial Valley. You're listening to your weekly wellness radio, Let's Talk About It, with your hosts, Scott and Maria. That's me. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7 Radio Bilingüe. Our phone number here at the station is 337-8874. Don't forget to dial 760 in front of it.
I'm sorry, you must dial 1760 when attempting to complete this call.
I'm getting used to the message. I'm getting used to the dial, the 1760. So.
Oh, okay. I am whenever I pick up the phone and actually think about what I'm supposed to be doing. When I pick up the phone on automatic pilot, it still just does not happen.
Okay.
Yeah, I almost guessed the answer to this one. You said it was like your hosts are like Scott and somebody. Raise my hand and go, oh, I know.
Me.
You, yeah.
Of course.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome, listeners. Good morning to you.
And I'm glad to be back, too.
Happy cold, short day season.
Yeah.
And our guest today is Iriana Lembo, and she is a mental health rehabilitation technician, too, with a master's degree, correct?
Yes.
Sweet. In marriage and family, what's it called?
Marriage, family, and child therapy.
All right. Well, we're lining up here. The hosts are lining up for our free therapy after the show. You can practice on us to get your degree. Well, Mario, we just got mine, too. So we're all ready to go. And what's our topic today?
Well, today we're going to be talking about the difference between a good parent and a responsible parent and pretty much everything that falls in between those two categories.
Like automatically be thinking good, responsible. Isn't that
that's
thing,
good.
Same thing? Or
well, that's good.
You're saying there's a difference. You're implying that good is on one side of the spectrum and responsible is on the other.
Yeah. I know it's an easy line to kind of not be able to distinguish the difference because we always try to be, you know, a good parent and try to include some kind of responsibility in that. But there definitely is some difference into that.
So who's going to call in today? That's going to be the question. Are the good parents going to dial 1-760-337-8874, or would that be the responsible parents?
Hopefully both.
Well,
you know what?
We'll make them self-identify.
I know, but
are you good or responsible?
Well, I don't see the difference. I mean, I think I'm a good parent, and I'm also a responsible parent. Even though, you know, I took my daughter when she was 4 months old out to the desert in the middle of the night for New Year's and put her on a race car and strapped her with a, you know, carrier. And
but you bundled her up.
Yeah, I bundled her up.
Yeah, yeah,
responsible. And I put the seatbelt on and everything, and there we went. Fast.
And she actually helped weigh down the back of the thing so it like, didn't roll over, right?
No, actually, it was pretty big. So what am I? I'm a good parent because I'm exposing her to stuff. And is that what it is? And I'm responsible because I bundle her up and put the seatbelt on the race car.
Well, ideally, I guess we could consider the perfect parent, although there really isn't,
ooh,
you know, the thing as perfect parent.
No, but there isn't.
But ideally, it would be a good combination of both, because if we were to look at this as different identities, the good parent would be more of the need to control. I need to control. I need to make all the decisions. Versus the responsible parent would be like, well, it's okay for the child to make some of those decisions because some of the consequences would actually impact the child. And also help the self-esteem and self-control.
So you're saying maybe not, we shouldn't say that we are good parents because your good parent might be different from my good parent. Just be a responsible parent.
Well, and I'm thinking, I know the moment that my daughter told me very clearly I wasn't a perfect parent was when I took her in for her baby vaccinations, and I was holding her on my lap when she got her first shot. And she looked at me with an expression of, like, horror. And it was very clear that the whole perfect.
In other words, she didn't tell you; she just expressed it to
well,
you.
Well, like,
based
on 2 months, 3 months old or something. But it was really clear. I was like, oh, you are not the perfect parent. Let's see, good parent. When did I lose that? The in control. I guess the first time she cried and I said stop crying and she didn't listen to me. Man, that was a lesson in control right there.
Yeah, no, and a lot of times also within the responsible parent, it's. You know you're a responsible parent when you admit that you're not perfect. You know, sometimes things, you try to be the good parent and things kind of backfire in a sense and didn't work out the way you planned them to. And just admitting, you know what, I'm human, and let's see what we can try to work with the child that will help and work for both of you.
Some people told me that I was not a good mother because I chose not to breastfeed.
There you go.
And, you know, I said that was, you know what, it's not for me, you know. And then they gave me, I know all the science and I know all the evidence that, you know, it provides good, what is it, builds up the baby's immunity.
And if it's a girl, it reduces the chance of breast cancer later
and,
for
but you
her.
Know what, but, you know, there's no history of that in my family. And
she did think it out, didn't
she? And she didn't get sick until the first time she got a fever was when she turned 3. So, and I didn't breastfeed. So, I mean, I was responsible enough to make sure that, you know, I did actually, well, maybe. I exposed her to a lot of stuff. So. But then that doesn't make, you know, in eyes of other people, that would be irresponsible parenting. You know, just the fact putting her in a car, in a race car. For some people, that would
be. So what we're struggling with is who designed the scale,
yeah, exactly.
And where on the scale does things fall?
Yeah, because where do I fall? You know, where I fall? You know, I made decisions. Some people call me I was not a very good mother because I chose not to breastfeed. And then, you know, some people might say I'm irresponsible because I put my 4-month-old baby in the race car. Well, your dad, I mean, who's experienced. But.
And it all goes hand in hand.
So what am I?
you really want to know?
it all goes hand in hand with the kind of lifestyle that you're used to as well. I mean, if we look at certain... say celebrities, you know, they take their kids, their newborns all over the country, going to different places. Mm-hmm. And even though for other people that may be, you know, irresponsible or not being a good parent or responsible parent, it's part of their lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Hence, you know, they are doing the responsible thing by taking their child. The same in your situation. You know, if it's part of your lifestyle to go out to the desert and do all these things.
We're just waiting until she turns 5 years. She's 3 right now. In 2 more years, she'll be 5 and she can start racing.
I guess I'm glad you guys weren't into hang gliding or ski jumping or something. You know, strap her on your back and let's go. So there must be a line there somewhere, too.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Safety is...
risk-taking parents.
Safety has to be involved in both sides of the parenting scale here. But it also, not only distinguishing the good parent versus the responsible parent, mm-hmm. It also has to do with how you react to certain behaviors that happen and the kind of consequences that are provided within those certain situations. Because
ooh.
There's also there's also differences between punishment and consequences. Mm-hmm. I think punishment holds a lot more weight and is seen more as a threat, in a sense, to the child than if you use the word a consequence. As well.
Okay, so let's define your terms. What exactly do you mean by punishment?
Mm-hmm. Well, punishment, from what I've seen and from the things that I try to implement when I'm trying to do some kind of parenting, is something that should be more of an internal factor. Punishment typically doesn't work out the way that one tends to think it's going to work out. For example, you take your child to the store and you say, you know, the child had a temper tantrum, opened up a couple of things, and you say, you know what, I'm never bringing you to the store. You're punished, and I'm never going to take you to the store again. So then what happens?
Really impractical,
you know?
Huh?
Yeah, exactly. It's not going to happen. It's not realistic.
My babysitting bill just went up like a fortune.
No, and eventually, you know, your child's going to have to go to the store. Now that just, you know, escalated all this frustration, this anger. You're going to get home. You're going to get even more angry.
And you're a liar now because you just made
exactly.
a promise you can't
keep.
Exactly.
Versus the consequence would be, you know what, if you don't stop this behavior, you're not going to be able to come to the store for the next couple of times, or when we get home, you're not going to be able to play with that now because I have to pay for it, or something that's more mm-hmm. of a short-term, more realistic.
Realistic.
Okay, because I'm kind of coming from, I guess, the veteran parent thing, because I've got grown-up kids now, and I guess for me, the difference between a consequence and a punishment for me is a consequence is something that naturally occurs that would make you less likely to keep doing the, what we can safely say is a maladaptive behavior.
You know what, and that
so
works
not,
for me.
Not, I don't have to punish you for not doing your homework because you're going to be on the wall at recess or whatever awful thing happens to you at school. You get a check mark, you don't get to go to the party, you know, whatever.
You know, I was never, when I was young, I was never hit. You know, I was never spanked. I was never nothing.
See, that's punishment, where the natural act doesn't have a consequence that,
yeah,
that sticks.
All
that,
they have
that's
to
really
do
effective,
is,
so I have to give you something bad.
No, all they have to do is that, okay, if you make that choice, just be prepared for the consequences. I didn't know what the consequences were.
Ooh, that was just like...
But it was just looming over me, you know, that there were going to be some consequences, you know, based on the decision that I was going to take. Because I told me, you can't make me, you know, I'm going to do it anyway. And he goes, okay, fine, you can do it, but just prepare for the consequences. And that would just stop me. That ruined it.
And a good way to remember the difference would be a punishment is more as to power and control of the child and the situation versus the consequences more of the realistic, logical side of it. Like you're saying, you know, you never really knew what the consequence was. You always feared that there actually was something there.
There's your power and control,
yes,
baby.
Yeah, so...
So then, there may be circumstances when assuming some power and control would be advantageous from the standpoint of parenting. I mean, it's not always perhaps advantageous, but certainly there are times. I mean, for example, with my kids, if they do something that violates one of my core values, for example, you know, like they like take a bunch of candy bars from the store, and they come home, and they got the candy bars. At that point, the natural consequence, the probability of getting caught, didn't really affect them because they didn't get caught. So now I'm going to, you know, make them go back to the store, give the candy bar to the security guard, explain why they took it, and then when they get home, maybe they don't get candy for a while or something, you know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, power and control, baby. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm there. I'm in. Because it's something that's important enough to me to do that for.
Yeah, definitely. And one other way also, just to add to that, so you can, you know, kind of mix in the good versus, you know, the good and the responsible parent would be, you know, that was their choice. That was their choice to take that. And now that's the consequence that they need to face.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Everybody has to be willing to live with the way the cards are played, basically.
Yes, definitely.
So what happens when a parent that is impaired. Let's say that, you know, there's a lot of parents that they make the wrong choices, and you know their drug use, you know, has impaired their parenting. You know, they haven't really been parents. So how do you start from teaching them what's, you know, for them, you know, probably being a good parent, being a responsible parent is, you know, making sure that the drugs were out of the reach of the kids, or they weren't, you know, they were using drugs.
That's probably a good idea. Even, you know,
if
you've got a bottle of wine in your house, you want to kind of put it up high, right?
So, you know, just, you know, how can you teach the parents in this, you know?
Yeah,
Where do you start?
Yeah, I mean, it does get difficult, especially when we're involving, you know, drug use or any kind of neglect in a sense. But I mean,
when I'm watching my novellas, nobody can talk to me, but that's not really neglect, okay? I just want to clarify that for the record.
Well, we're having to start from basics in those situations, just basics, you know.
When I'm talking on Facebook, leave me alone, okay?
But you're still providing, you know, the essentials to your children. You're not
food, clothing, shelter, care.
You're not having them sit outside, you know, in the cold while you're sitting there watching your novellas.
But we could be having a relationship, come on.
So, in a situation like the one Maria brought up, I mean, that's basically where you have to start, making sure that you emphasize to the parent, in this case, us as a professional, right, emphasize to the parent, you know, make sure your kids have the essentials. That would be more as to the responsible parent. And then just kind of work with them as to what it is that they already implement and kind of add to that to strengthen it. Because if we go in with the mindset, you know what, you're doing this wrong, just adding to what they've been hearing all this time, we're only going to get a negative response and not be able to help anybody.
Well, you already kind of kicked out there that responsible parents understand their lack of perfection.
Mm-hmm.
And accept it. So, you know, of course, of course I do things wrong.
I'm definitely not perfect.
Yeah, but it is difficult as a professional sometimes to have to go to a home, and the main focus of me being there is okay, let's work on parenting. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, you know, at first it was difficult to be like, okay, well, I'm here to, you know, kind of help you out with your parenting because you may not be doing a good job.
Yeah, what kind of response do you get from parents?
Yeah.
Excuse me, who are you to tell me?
Definitely. No. Well, it was always as to how I approach things. I never actually went in and said, you know what, you're not doing a good job, and
I'm the expert, you know.
Yet your agenda was to do some environmental interventions.
Yes, definitely. And what I think was the most challenging for me when I first started implementing some type of parenting in my interventions was the fact that I haven't been a parent very long.
Mm-hmm.
So never did I have a parent say, well, you're not a parent, or ask me, well, are you a parent, you know. But I have heard that been said to other individuals, and I was lucky enough never had to be in that situation. But I always seem to start off in that sense. Okay, show me what you're doing, and we'll mm-hmm. kind of go and see what maybe we can try to help you make better or add some changes mm-hmm. to it.
Wait. But you're a rehabilitation technician for mental health.
Yes.
Which means you're treating children with mental health disorders.
How
is that, you know, it's like a brain thing, right? How is that related to my parenting?
Yeah. A lot of times, I know we a lot of times think, you know, it's mainly for children who have ADHD or have any other kind of depression or any kind
but
of...
But my parenting doesn't cause that.
True, but a lot of times it does add to the stressors in the home, mm-hmm. Especially when you have children who are coming for oppositional behaviors, or most of the problems are coming due to the dysfunction in the home environment. So a lot of times...
Is that fairly common then?
Yes, it is.
Especially the conduct disorders too.
Yes, definitely. Conduct disorders are very unique in its own because, I mean, you can't really give... it's funny having to tell a parent, well, you know, we don't have medication to help with that, but we can offer you this instead and kind of try to implement some of the behavior modification we're talking mm-hmm. about.
So I guess your sales point on that is there are parental management strategies for children with special needs that may make the situation much more easier for everyone. How's that?
Sounds very good,
is that fair?
Actually. Yeah, definitely, because if we try to just focus on the child's impairment, we try to focus on what's going on in the school, what's going on in the community, and totally neglect what's going on in the home, it's not going to work.
I have different relationships with all my kids, too. I'm just kind of thinking, and it's not like I have, you know, father 1.0 version running, and it whoever shows up in front of my face gets father 1.0 version. Now, I've got like 1.1 and 1.2 and 1.3. And depending if it's 1, 2, or 3 that shows up in front of me, I've got kind of different stuff going on.
Yeah, definitely. Every child is different. And I always stress to the parents that I work with as well that every parenting style is different. What may work for you may not work for the next person. And the same thing, what may work for you with one child may not work for the same with the rest of your children. So you have to kind of make your own type of parenting style. It's like any other thing that we learn. You know, you kind of pick and choose what works mm-hmm. for you and make your own from there. So it applies the same to parenting.
We're here with Iriana Lembo, and she's a mental health rehabilitation technician for Imperial County Behavioral Health.
Children's Department.
With a master's degree. Yay. And 337-8874 is the phone number if you add 1760 to the beginning of your call. And you could call us and you know, self-identify. Are you a good parent? Or you're a responsible parent. So good parents are into power and control. Because they want a sense of propriety, or what's going on?
I think it's more going hand in hand with human nature. I mean, we as, you know, parents, we kind of tend to want to always do what's right for our kids mm-hmm. in most situations.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically why it's more as to the nurturing and having the control.
You know, it could be your mom and dad on the line.
No. But you know what? I mean, it's really hard for me to say that, you know, the good parent is the one that wants the control. Because, you know, it's so hard because good, in the sense the word, is a positive thing.
Of course.
It's a very positive thing. And for me to say, you know, no, I don't want to be a good parent. I want to be a responsible parent. I don't know. It's still hard for me to kind of put it in my head, you know, that good is bad.
Or good may not be as
good
effective.
As effect.
You know, maybe And we have a caller on the air. Let's see if we actually...
Hello?
Noise.
Hello?
Oh, there we
Hello?
Go. Oh, there we
Hi.
Go. Welcome, sir.
Oh, thank you very much. Very kind of you. Good morning. I'm wondering, what's the percentage of single-parent homes that you... what's the percentage of single-parent homes for the kids that you treat?
Actually, it's probably higher than what I would have expected myself coming into this field. Most of the families that I do work with are from single-parent homes or are from different family-parent homes. For example, you have, you know, the father with the one relationship and then the mother in another one. So definitely it is pretty high.
Okay.
More than 50%, 60%?
I would have to say about 75%.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that would definitely put a strain on the parenting because, you know, a healthy home, I would imagine, in order to bring good parenting, would need a father and a mother for most cases. I mean, studies have shown that father and mother homes tend to give a child, a healthier home to avoid, you know, drug abuse, you know, early pregnancy, teenage pregnancy, what have you. So.
Unless, of course, the father and mother are at each other's throats, one would suspect.
And especially if there's drug abuse. And, Ileana, you worked in a program, right, with when the kids were taken away from the parents because of drug abuse, correct?
For a very short time, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Sure. But in situations like that, what I've had to do is basically start with setting a foundation for the limit setting, especially in single-parent homes, because one parent is having to take the role of two, basically. So having to set a good framework for limit setting and following through with those limits, then you kind of move on to, okay, let's focus on the good and the responsible and kind of go from there. Now, in homes where it's a mom and a stepdad and then the dad and the stepmom, then you kind of focus with the primary caregiver and then move those interventions to the other home to try to come up with the same thing.
You know, I remember reading a study somewhere where, like, on an average home, you know, the average dad spends, like, 5 minutes or 15 minutes a day with their kids. I mean, something ridiculous like that. I mean, I would think that would definitely bring a strain and stress to kids, you know, it seems like a lot of kids are neglected nowadays, and that would definitely, you know, make a kid feel very sad and very lonely and very unwanted, I would think. I don't think it's so much they were born with ADD. I think most definitely that the home causes a lot of what the kids go through.
Yes, definitely. And that's why we also try to focus on not just the impairment they come up with, but the stressors that are going on in the home. Yes.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Oh, no, thank you.
Thank you for calling. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, and we appreciate all the calls out there, so there you go. That's how it works. 337-8874. We're going to take a happy hour break. We'll be right back here listening to Let's Talk About It, and we'll see you on the downside.
You're listening to Let's Talk About It, presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. A 5 to 6 minute highlight podcast of the same show is available on KXOradio.com.
And welcome back. You are still listening to Let's Talk About It, your weekly wellness radio for Imperial and Mexicali Valleys. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7. Phone number here at the station is 337-8874.
I don't know if you've ever thought about it, but here in the studio, it's really hard to keep those saxophone players quiet in between sets. They're just like sitting over there
They're
looking
awesome.
Really antsy, and we have to kind of cue them and say, okay, guys, it's your turn now.
Yeah. Again, our phone number here at the station is 337-8874.
And our guest is Ileana Lembo. She's a mental health rehabilitation technician, too, which means nothing to the rest of the universe, but to us it's important.
She just got her master's. She just finished her in marriage and family therapy, correct?
Yes.
That's awesome.
Marriage, family,
you know,
children.
We had a caller, and he was talking about, you know, the a lot of issues, you know, the single parenting and parents, you know, not being able to spend enough time with their children. And it's you can see it in especially when you work with children, with adolescents. I work a lot with kids who are in juvenile hall and kids who are in substance abuse treatment. And a lot of them have something in common. There's a lot of dysfunction at home. There's a lot of dysfunction at home, but there's a lot of kids who are being raised by their grandparents because either the mother is a drug user and the father's in jail, either the father was deported back to Mexico, the mother is working hard as a single parent. There's a lot of things, issues, and then children are kind of lost, fall into this hole. And Iriana's here to...
So there's like a third category. There's good, there's responsible, and there's people barely getting by because of distracted lives for whatever reason. And it could just be work. I mean, as you mentioned, this, even if you have a father in the house, the daily contact ratio of the kids is like pretty small.
Yeah, I think, in fact, I know he, I think he mentioned like 5 minutes that a parent spends with their kids, but
father,
actually,
in particular,
you're
father,
yeah,
Tony and Lovello.
I think it's less than that, actually, because I don't remember which study it was, but I do remember reading. It was about 2 minutes, I believe.
Yeah, we have to use an egg timer in my house because sometimes we slip to 3 minutes, and that's too much.
But definitely spending time with your child is extremely important. And I know a lot of times when we think of, okay, well, you know what, my child was good, let's reward him or let's reward her with something, it's easier to think of something materialistic. You know, it's easier to go and get something, buy something. But a lot of times when a child is seeking that time to spend with their parent and it's something that they really, really enjoy, but maybe the parent is working 2-3 jobs or going to school or doesn't really have all the time, that is a very, very positive reward to give your child as well.
Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it also has to do with, like you said, work and the age of a parent. You know, I see a lot of young parents that, you know, there's
like
a new family. Not you. You know, and it's hard. I mean, that's just reality. They're young parents, and they're starting off, and they have, you know, in their jobs, and they have to work and work, you know, to be able to pay for daycare, for babysitter. Mm-hmm. And that was the case with my husband, with my stepkids.
Yeah,
work.
That was me, 27-year-old, working 18 hours a day in my own business.
Yeah, yeah, now my, you know, this time around, you know, my husband is in his 50s, and he takes my daughter to school, and he spends with her an hour and a half at school with her, playing with her, you know, and or takes her with her.
Well, you know, if you're lucky enough to get a second or third lap around the track when you're a little bit older, you begin to recognize that, you know, you're not going to get any of those chances.
Yeah, and you realize.
Kids grow up really fast.
But the thing is, it's the reality. What I'm trying to say is the reality. This is, you know, what you, as young parents, what can you do? You know, this is reality, you know, that you have to have. You know, we have to work to be able to pay for the daycare.
Second SUV. Oh.
But you know, it's hard and
with all the charger
and then
labels
again,
on it.
And then again, what is that? Is that a responsible parent? Is that a good parent? You know, just
providing for economic security.
Yeah. So you can't spend that much time
at
with
the
your
cost
kids,
of a child's
so
relationship. Interesting.
Yeah, it's very difficult. I think being a parent is something definitely to be proud of, but it is something very, very difficult because there's no wrong or right answer. I mean, we don't get a handbook, you know, when our child is born, and we just pretty much trial and error. Even, you know, as a professional, as somebody who works in the field who kind of has to go and try to make modifications to different parenting skills, it's kind of like saying, okay, well, why am I, you know, the one teaching when I'm myself and learning? But it just kind of goes hand in hand with what I mentioned earlier. You know, there's no such thing as a perfect parent, and you just kind of learn. And sometimes it's okay to ask for help. Hey, am I doing this right?
So it's kind of trial and error within some general, maybe this would work better, guidelines, I suppose. But I guess the whole point of trial and error is paying attention to the errors.
Yeah, so don't do them again. Don't do them again, okay?
It didn't work. No sense in repeating it.
But I know that in the children's department, they have the nurturing parenting.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the type of parenting class.
Yes, that is something that I believe Bertha mentioned yesterday, in fact, on the air, that someone will be coming in shortly as well to kind of talk a little bit more about
nurturing parenting.
Yes, that new program that they're coming up that I think will be extremely beneficial to everybody who can, you know, benefit from it.
And it's, I think that's geared towards, you know, infants, toddlers, adolescents, and it's amazing.
It's pretty much all the kids.
It's all the kids. Yes. But we also have other programs, and, you know, I've been, Iriana is aware of this, the functional family therapy, which in behavioral health we have never had family therapy,
mm-hmm.
you know, as a structured, you know, evidence-based family therapy. And that's going on. And we have several families who are receiving right now therapy, and we're excited about it because we're going into their homes if they wish, if the family wishes. If not, we can be seen at our offices. But, you know, it's seen, it's not just the mom, dad, and the minor. You know, it could be the mom, dad, the minor, and the siblings, or it could be mom, whoever has that influence on that child. It could be the parents, the grandparents, and not the parents at all. Parents probably might not be in the picture.
Yeah, maybe we should be calling this caregiving instead of parenting because it takes on very many
different
forms. Exactly.
Yeah, we have a lot of grandparents raising their grandkids. So,
or step-people even.
Yeah, or step-parents. And shoot, I was a step-parent, so yeah. But I am still a step-parent. But this is such a good model. This is such a good program. And real excited because there is positive outcomes. So there is other, you know, besides it, you know, if parenting, if it's said if you first have to do functional family therapy, then you do the parenting. So
it makes sense because that gives you opportunity to go in the home, which is, you know, the ideal place
which
for it.
Which you've learned in functional family, you know, just to resolve some issues. And it's actually more for towards family conflict when there's a lot of family conflict going on. When mother has, you know, she's lost, you know, control of her child because she's a single mom, you know, and there's a lot of guilt. You find out that mother feels a lot of guilt too because she's working constantly because she's the provider and she doesn't spend a lot of time. So, and she's tired. She comes home tired from work and the child, you know, says, you know what, I'm going to take off. You know, this, you know, you can't, still takes off, you know, and she gives in because she doesn't want to fight. Because she's guilty
because
she's working all day.
Ultimately, once they're as strong as you, you cannot literally control them. You have to kind of set it up in ways that it plays out in your favor.
Mm-hmm. So then with functional family therapy, that gets resolved. And then there, you know, you can do the nurturing, the parenting classes to reinforce what you've to continue. So it's awesome. I mean, I'm excited because we have this whole system.
You know, it occurs to me that one of the things that might be useful in parenting in terms of management strategies or whatever is kind of beginning at the end and saying to yourself, gee, mom or dad or whatever, what do I want coming out of the tubes at 18 years old in terms of end product? And you know, how do I want this person to be able to coexist in the world as a young adult? What kind of things do I want in terms of safety and responsibility, integrity, honesty, whatever, and initiative? You know, hey, that'd be good. I'm get off of my couch and go get a job.
Well, what is the goal? I mean, what's the goal of being a parent?
It's individual. I don't know that you'd have to have. I mean, I think, you know, maybe in your sense, remember how your parents responded when you went to UC Long Beach. You know, ooh, that wasn't exactly what they had for their precious little darling, cute little daughter. Leaving home, kid.
Okay.
Uh-oh. You know, so I think there's some cultural variances, and I think there's some individual preference variables. But ultimately, I think once you've kind of gotten in touch with that inside of yourself and your partner, you know, if that's the way this is playing out, your partner has gotten in touch with what they're trying to get to, and you can kind of reconciliate those two points of view so that you're not like going across purposes all the time. I want really independent. Well, I don't, you know.
Well, I mean, the goal for, you know, now that I'm not raising my stepkids, it's that, you know, this is my daughter. But the same thing with my stepkids. So the goal is for them to be raised as responsible human beings who are contributing citizens of a community, who are independent, self-sufficient, because you never know what's going to happen. And that happened in the case of my husband. You know, he lost his wife. And, you know, something should happen. You know, your kids are by themselves or raised by, you know, you lose both parents. You're okay. You know, the parent knows that, well, they're not going to be here, but they're going to move on. They're going to be able to sustain and be responsible, you know, self-sufficient.
And bring me home some grandbabies.
Just you have to always prepare for the unexpected. And so you want to raise your children in case you're not going to be here tomorrow.
Okay. So for you, that's your...
And that's, they can be on their own and they'll be okay.
That play out with a
three-year-old? With a three-year-old, you make sure that if we're not here, that there's life insurance.
But you're also teaching her how to be independent. At some
level. She's on her own. You can do it.
So maybe responsible parenting means being responsible to your own mission, I guess, as a parent.
Yes, and that includes also teaching them about, independence versus, always having to be dependent of a parent.
Because you might not be. I mean, you don't want that.
Parents may also have, on the other hand, this dependency need themselves.
Yes, and it also goes
with... It seems like that's okay. It's your life.
And it goes also hand-in-hand with the cultural, the culture factors. Some cultures, it's common to have your kid be in your home until, they're in their 20s.
Or until they get married. 30.
Exactly. And still being married, you go to your mom's house for breakfast, lunch, dinner, or, sometimes, my mom does laundry better than you, so I'm going to take it over there.
Well, and some kids and some people raise, unisex children, and some people are pretty gender-specific in how they raise their kids.
You know what? I have to say this. When my daughter was little, I even gave her cars and trucks and stuff and race cars, the Jimmy Johnson race car.
How'd that work?
She likes it, but she prefers her little purses and her baby and her carrots.
So my 8-year-old. That's cool. Okay, it's disclosure time. My 8-year-old, she asks for boy toys. Now that they've gender differentiated the toys in the little things, it's like she got a couple pink ponies with long hair, and she was like, I want some spy adventure action toys. So now she knows. Now she goes in and she says, I'll have the kids' meal, and I want the boy toy. Because the boy toys for her are cooler because they've
the
got
subject.
Like secret purposes.
What were you talking about?
Because there's individual differences in planning.
And I think they have to make their own choices. That's what I was trying to
say. Because if you define what you think their kids should look like when they're growing, then you're probably going to run into a brick wall on that one.
Yes, and not only that, but then, having to put them through that disappointment of feeling like, I didn't meet my parents' expectations, I didn't achieve what they thought I was going to do, and then that just kind of, opens a whole other can of worms, per se.
But it's hard. And you said, culturally, for a child, for them to be independent and make their own choices, that's hard for, especially in the Hispanic culture. You just want it's like the hen with all the little chickens, little chicks, just there in the house. Keep them there.
And there may be some inherent value to that, because certainly that kind of family consolidarity may be very useful when, now everybody has to move back into their mom's homes anyway because of the mortgage crisis, I don't know that it's individual choices, so I don't think there's a right or wrong on this. It's pretty much what you believe in and what you value enough to follow through and do.
Yeah, and it all goes back to the same thing that, we can't try to implement the same thing for everybody in the same home, because for some people, the goal may be for your kid to go off to college or, go out to be a doctor or something. But realistically, for some of the families that we've worked with, it's been more like, I want my kid to finish high school, and I want my kid to finish high school and go to college or get a job. So it's more as to meeting with the parent and kind of exploring, okay, what do you want, but yet what does your child want? Kind of trying to find some middle ground.
Well, there's kind of a, let me give you an analogy. When you look at an acorn, you have no idea that you can even begin to conceive it as an oak tree.
Yeah.
Yet in that acorn is that oak tree. And it's almost for me the same way with kids. It's like, how would I know my kid's life purpose? I can look at the seed and say, what a cute little kid, and not know what kind of tree they're going to grow up into.
I when I had my daughter, goes, she needs to, even starting, she's going to go to college. I'm already starting that. My husband goes, that's bringing back to reality. You know what? You can guide them, but ultimately they'll make their own choices.
I think that's just human.
All you can do is guide them.
See, there's two different parenting philosophies.
And I'm like, and it's true, but I just, it's hard.
Yeah, definitely. And, talking about, you know, the consequences that come with having to redirect your child, per se, you know, differentiating from punishment and the good parent and the responsible parent. Ultimately, you know, you kind of have to make your own parenting style. It's very different having to, especially if you're more of a visual person, having to sit in a room to go through a parenting class. I mean, I've come across many, many parents who successfully completed several parenting classes, and yet I'm having to sit there with them.
Again.
Yes, to actually
practice. Well, you're hearing it and seeing it, but you're not behaviorally acting it out. Well, and the other thing is again, if the parenting class has selected this, you know, very thin range of here's how you manage children, and that's not philosophically what the parent wants to do, or it's beyond the reach of this kid with special needs, yeah, and, you know, you get a mismatch.
It's all about being creative and resourceful. I mean, sometimes having to teach a parent how to, per se, take a time out. You know, it may not work the same for a 3-4-year-old who has ADHD than it would for a 3-4-year-old who has a conduct disorder, per se. So it's kind of being resourceful in the sense as to, okay, what can the child see and acknowledge, okay, this is my cue to kind of try to de-escalate mm-hmm. my behavior, and yet kind of have the parent continue to reinforce that consequence.
Well, and what am I, as a parent, what am I teaching with a timeout? Am I trying to get them to get some self-regulation skills? Do I just want to chill out because my 4 minutes with the kid is over?
Yeah, exactly. Understanding what the purpose of it is very important. Definitely.
That's a good one.
Look, I need a break right now. Would you, like, vamoose?
Yeah.
No, you wouldn't do that, Scott.
Hang on. Somebody just instant messaged me. No.
No. But, I mean, Scott, like...
It's like mindful, conscious parenting.
No,
that's
yes,
kind of
yes,
where, I guess,
yes.
where my head's at.
We have to be conscious. I mean, we have to be conscious. We have to be...
And true to yourself.
True, you know, and like Ileana said, you know, something that might work for me doesn't work for you. Something that works for you doesn't work for me.
Yeah, and the work comes not just in trying to be a good and responsible parent and implementing that in your home, but also constantly reinforcing that as well. For example, my son goes to childcare. Mm-hmm. So even though we try to set a certain
Is that good or responsible? I'm sorry.
A little bit of both. Even though, you know, we're trying to set a certain set of responsibilities and consequences and structure overall in the home, mm-hmm. sometimes, you know, at school there's
You're playing a different song.
Yeah, there's that one child, you know, who doesn't have that in the home. So then my son will come home kind of trying to play the same behavior, and it's having to redirect and restructure. And it is a lot of work. And I can understand how some parents will say, you know what, do what you have to do. That's fine. I'll deal with it later.
Yeah.
Then later never gets here.
Yeah.
So it's difficult.
Well, especially, like I said, especially if you are like a single parent and you get home late and you're tired and you need to be both the mom and the dad and child is acting up, we just, some of them just give in, you know, just whatever they want here. And
I'm going to get a t-shirt that says, I am a successful child of a single parent household. No, because you may still have co-parenting,
yeah.
But locationally, you only have one person basically on site at any given time.
Or, you know, I mean, that would be nice if there's co-parenting, but if you have, because you're a single parent, because, you know, the other partner is it's in jail or reported.
That can happen.
They do not contribute economically, financial. So you have to be both mom and dad.
Well, and in the moment, you have to anyway, typically, because you're the only one there.
Yes.
It's hard, but not impossible.
No, it's true.
Yeah.
True. But it's hard, so my hat's off to all the single
Definitely.
Parents. All the single parents out there. My hat's off because...
Yeah, I kind of would hesitate to say that there's an inherent additional risk. I'm sure it's a different game and there's some stressors involved. But the vice versa, the opposite picture of this, where two people that are definitely mutually incompatible choose to stay together for the sake of the children, then that could be crazy, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's not good either. That's not very healthy.
Yeah, all these others
are healthy from
them.
Listen, I got the research, and it says we have to stay together.
You know, I know.
Yeah, you mentioned that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, because children learn. They learn by the parents.
Stay together, but you're sleeping in that room and don't ever talk to me. and the kids are going to get that.
This
is the way we're supposed to be adults in relationships. Nice. Because they're going to download
whatever
relational style is and go ahead and pick partners and play it back out again.
And I think it is important also as a parent to be aware that, you know, you were brought up a certain way, and it doesn't necessarily mean it's right or wrong, but it's okay to be a little different with your own kids. Sometimes, especially in certain cultures, it may seem like, well, I was brought up this way, this is the way I have to be with my son or my daughter. Mm-hmm. No, it's perfectly fine.
Nothing's written in stone.
Exactly.
unless you wanted to be, I want to go back to that, unless you wanted to just be true to yourself.
Yes. Yeah.
And because if you're not authentic in what you're doing, if you're trying to do it because you think
and
school told you
work.
You're supposed to do it or whatever, then, you know, it's going to typically not work.
And now that you mentioned school, I mean, there's so much pressure for parents nowadays coming from school, especially your kids acting up or whatnot at school. Right away, it's like, you know what, take him to behavioral health. Maybe he needs medication or take him, maybe, you know, what's going on in the home. A lot of stress is being applied to the parents for those whose kids are having behavioral issues in the school system.
How about I do my 18 hours at home, you do your 6 hours at school?
Oh.
Is that fair? I don't know. I've got really well-behaved kids.
For those parents, what kind of advice you would give? Let's say that they do get a call from the school saying, you know what, your kid...
We
is,
need your help on this.
You know, what is it?
A version of that.
You know, what you need your... You have... your child is having a lot of problems here at school. You need to take care of it.
Yeah,
What should parents do?
Well, definitely would be the first thing, you know, try to meet with the teacher. Try to meet with the teacher and say, like, okay, well, show me your concerns, and then kind of from there, in a sense, put it back on the school and say, okay, what have you tried to do to help with this behavior, and what can I help to do as well? It has to be like a 50-50, because the child, realistically, I mean, they spend most of their time at school to begin with, and even though I am a true believer that, you know, a child should learn certain behaviors at home, you know, the do's and don'ts, not necessarily at school, but yet the school does have to reinforce that as well.
Well, I don't have 30 kids in my living room, so
the rules are a little different. My hat's off to
all
those teachers right now, definitely, because they do have, I have gone to classrooms, and there's one teacher for, like, 34 students. But yet, you know, there also has to be some kind of, the parent has to follow up with the school.
It's another relationship.
Yes, definitely.
Now, here's.
So in other words, have it be an active parent in your child's school.
Very much so.
Yes. But would it be safe to say that some children have really negative experiences in school? They're labeled not quite as smart. They're labeled not quite as responsible.
They're being bullied.
Yes.
They sit in the corner. They're on the wall at recess. They get the kind of, you know, teacher negative reinforcement stuff. Even, you know, when you're not trying, geez, I'm disappointed again. You're a really smart child. If you only tried a little harder. And now they're grown up and they're parents, and they get a note from their school. Can you imagine the internal reaction when it's like, come talk to me? You know, they're already feeling like school's made them feel really inadequate. Now they have to go back and do it again.
Yeah.
You know, and they're going to get some inadequate parenting messages, I'm sure. You know.
Oh, yeah.
Hard to avoid that, honestly.
And those are typically the parents that do have more difficulties seeking help, in a sense, because it's like, well, I live through it and I'm fine, but realistically, you know, it's like,
are you fine, really?
Yeah.
Are you?
You horribly scarred me, but I'm fine.
Yeah, and definitely, that's when, you know, that's why we're here. We're here to help with those situations when it's not just stuff going on at home.
Sometimes it can be an intermediary or somebody to liaison.
A lot of times it's just something as simple as requesting a student study team meeting to kind of address some of the issues that are going on, and then the underlying issue does come, of course, sometimes from the parenting, but then how to address that at home and at school.
But the sad reality is because I was reading the paper that there's going to be more cuts at the school, so what goes out first, any type of, like,
social support,
you know, the counselors, they're the first to, you know, get cut. And
that and art,
kind of
art and music are right behind
you. Art and music,
school activities,
all that gets cut off, and that's the unfortunate reality of it.
Yeah, definitely. And that's where our work has gotten a little more constructive, in the sense that we have to also kind of try to provide a parent with alternative options to help their kids during the after school or their primary caregiver when before, say, they were going to, like, an after-school program or some type of tutoring, but yet now they don't, and mom and dad are working or, you know, not around, like you mentioned, you know. So that's where, again, the parent has to be a little more resourceful and try to come up with different ways to make up for that time.
Find somebody to try and do the job as closely as I do it so that we don't have all these pushing and pulling stuff going on. Hey, you know what? I just was high-signing Mario asking if we could go to 10 o'clock this morning because this is a really engaging topic and we feels like we're right in the middle of it. And Mario said no. Mario said,
we have to.
No.
We have
the show
to go
ends
away.
At 8:30.
Yep.
Folks. Trying to be, no, yeah, a responsible parent.
Responsible person. He's not a parent yet. He's not a parent yet. A responsible person.
All right, Dad. Anyhow, I want to thank Ileana.
Thank you. Trimble. Thank you for having me.
Coming aboard today. It was fun, huh?
Yeah, definitely. Should do this more often.
Well, you know, speaking of doing this more often, the holiday season is upon us, and so we'll be doing best of shows next week and the week after.
Yes.
And so.
Next year. I'll see you next year.
I'll see you next year on the radio, or I'll hear you next year, or you'll hear me on the radio next year, something like that.
So, for everyone, have a happy, safe holiday,
safe and
spend time with your family and have fun.
Connect, man.
Lots of tamales.
Lots of beautiful people out there.
Eat lots of tamales.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUBO 88.7 FM, Radio Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.